nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone, and this is OneRadioNetwork.com. Let's take off the replay button because we are live here this morning. It is March 2nd, 2021. March 2nd, 2021. Dr. Ray Pete, a special appearance because we were iced in during the third week of January. So he was willing to come back on, and we're going to get him back in a few weeks, we hope, so we get back on a regular schedule. But we have lots of emails, and we never get to all the emails. So I think it'll be good to have him on a little bit more this month. Hope he doesn't mind. I didn't ask him if he's going to come back on in a few weeks, but we'll ask him on the air, so we'll put him on the spot. Just kidding. We are live. I believe, the 800 number is going to work. It's 888-663-6386. Just a bit of business before we move on. The Real World of Money with Fred Deshefsky will be here tomorrow, and then also Matthew Arrett, and he's going to talk about the deep, deep, deep roots of the deep, deep, deep state. He's a great researcher, and I think you'll have fun really understanding how this entity that we call the deep state, how they got started, and how they are existing today, ostensibly controlling lots of things. So that'll be tomorrow, regenerative farming on Thursday, and then we're going to do a special Friday presentation, and not sure exactly what we're going to be doing, but has a lot to do with it takes a long time to get young. We are not doing any of the social media. We do a few minutes before each show, like we're doing right here. We do our little social media post. I don't have anything specific this morning, but then we're working on a little chat room right on One Radio Network. So we're not on anywhere. We just kind of gave up on them all because I just didn't have the time, and it's just too much. You know, I'm doing enough right here with you. So let me know if we can help at Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Dr. Ray Pete is here. He is an interesting fellow, been around quite a few years in his body, PhD in biology way back. Schools that he has taught in include University of Oregon, Urbana College, Montana State University, National College of Naturopathic Medicine, Universidad Veracruzana, Universidad Autonomista de Mexico. I didn't pronounce that correctly. So he spent some time south of the border. He started his work with progesterone and related hormones in 68. He's done papers, all kinds of papers in physiological chemistry and physics, 71, 72. But he'll talk about most anything, spiritual matters and evolution and all kinds of stuff. And we're going to talk to him more about those things as we get to know him even more, but he's been on the show here on the third Monday for a long time. And Dr. Pete, as always, we truly appreciate you taking the time to come on our show. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are things up there on the left coast? You doing okay?
The weather is remarkably good the last few days, sunny and warmer, a great relief after the dark winter.
Did you read about our little freezing episode we had here in Texas?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It was really something. It was really something. And now more and more information is coming out, Dr. Pete, about how they just really screwed up, you know, with the subsidizing alternative energy and the windmills frozen. And it was just, making the wrong decisions to make this whole thing happen.
Yeah.
Pretty curious how we have such a fragile grid all around the country, isn't it?
I think it lacks engineering design right from the start. It could have been designed more stably.
Yeah.
Odd things turn up, like at one point someone discovered that the whole thing, when it was integrated, resonated and tended to be interrupted just by resonating with the Earth's resonance frequency in the solar wind. what they had done was create a huge antenna across the country in the power grid that was being interfered with just by the streaming energy from the sun that makes the Earth ring at a certain frequency.
And then what effect did that have on us humanoids? Anything?
They were also studying the effects of that. I think it was 11 cycles per second that it started vibrating at. And that tends to drive the solar wind, apparently, is what drives that basic brain rhythm in humans. And so they experimented, put people in a cage where they could keep out those natural oscillations subject the brain to an artificial field with varying frequencies. They gradually slowed the vibration frequency below 10 or 11 cycles down around 7 or 8 cycles, the brain rhythm being artificially driven slower. The people all got feeling sick and disoriented. So our normal consciousness, according, I think that was either an FBI or NASA study, it showed that our normal consciousness is based on resonance with the Earth cavity.
Oh, so actually got the vibrations and the impulses through the wiring in the homes? Is that where that's happening?
Right through the earth and the air.
All right, wow.
So when you're in a house with wiring, mm-hmm. You get some of it imposed from the sun and the earth, but you're mainly being subjected to 60 cycles a second in the house.
In the house. We have heard over the years that 60 cycles is actually a little bit more difficult for the body to deal with than what they do 50 in Europe. Is that true?
No, I haven't heard that. But both of them are unnatural. And
yes,
I used to like the area where I have a house in Mexico. Mm-hmm. The University of Mexico built a stellar radio antenna there, mm-hmm. because it was so free of artificial radiation, just a few miles from my house. But now I don't suppose the radio antenna is very good anymore because of the cell phone towers that have invaded the area.
You could feel just healthier or just happier in your body when you were there?
My health always improved, even my eyesight.
No kidding. Wow. There's quite a bit of research. We've done shows, Dr. Pete, over the years about the wiring in the home with the 60 cycles and the white noise that it does, you know, the dirty electricity, and mm-hmm. and how you can actually put little capacitors in very inexpensively and you plug them in. And they've done research with Magda Havas up in Canada, you may know of, and about affecting the blood sugar and thyroid and everything with this. Wow. It's amazing that we humans have done so well with all the different things we get thrown at us.
But the World Health, especially Europe and the United States, the health and lifespan are decreasing rapidly in recent years.
Oh, they say it is. Is that a fact or is that fake news?
The CDC matches other sources that the actual lifespan average is shortening the last 3 or 4 years. And the documented rate of allergies, autoimmune diseases, degenerative diseases in young people has skyrocketed in the last 30 years.
And what would Dr. Ray Pete attribute that to?
The bad foods, polyunsaturated fats, and vaccinations, and another big cause is the nanoparticles that are being used in food, industry, clothing, soaps and shampoos, constantly exposure to this microscopic junk that goes right into our cells and turns on inflammatory processes.
Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot of negative things about nanotechnology. Is there any good stuff, or is all things that are nanotechnology detrimental, do you know, for the body?
The industry talks about the great value of, they say, targeting drugs mm-hmm. into cells. I think that's all phony, absolute phoniness. they sell ways to, for example, target extraneous DNA to do genetic engineering or gene therapy.
Uh-huh.
But when someone was doing a control using those commercial targeting agents, they did a control using plain untreated DNA along with those chemical targeting agents, and they found the crude DNA went into cells better than the commercial supposedly useful material.
I see. It actually went into the cells better. Do we know what the nano stuff and soaps or face cream or whatever does inside the cell? Is the science there to show what it does?
The particle size is the important thing. The substance chemistry doesn't matter as much as the size of the particle. And in a certain very small particle range, it signals activation of the inflammatory process.
Hmm.
And turns on the cytokines that turn on other inflammatory cascades. And so if you're on the edge of slight metabolic fatigue or weakness, then those things can really activate a process like lung inflammation, bowel inflammation, changes in the brain and all of the tissues.
We're talking with Dr. Ray Peet, generally the third Monday, but we had the ice thing going on. We were without water, electricity, heat. We had just wood-burning stove in the snow. That was about it. So, yeah, we've moved him up to here. Patrick Timpone, we are live here this morning, March 2nd, 2021. If you have a question, Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. So, do we have any evidence of how to get these guys out of the body? Would it be the natural detox mechanism, saunas, and just through the bowel and the kidney and stuff?
I think we have a very inefficient way to get these tiny things out, but to the extent that white blood cells can detect and remove them, because they enter right into nerve cells, blood vessel walls, right into the cell, it is not obvious to the white blood cells whether they need to be removed right away,
mm-hmm.
because it can start a very slow chronic process. But when the white blood cells can catch them, then I think the white blood cells can degenerate in a way that lets them be excreted either through the bowel or the kidney.
Yes. I've actually seen some stories that there's like nano silver on maybe the Kraft cheese slices that we don't recommend, of course, because it's not really cheese, but, you know, to keep it fresher, right? The little plastic stuff.
People used to put a silver coin in the swimming pool.
Huh.
Copper is very similar, so that you didn't have to use chemicals to keep down the algae growth. Just a very small amount of, if you don't have a water purifier, putting a silver coin in your water and letting it stand has a strong germicidal effect.
I've often wondered about the colloidal silver craze that went through the natural food. I think it's still around. You can find a lot of them. They're supposed to be antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal. Do you know anything about those? And And do they carpet bomb and kill a lot of good stuff too? Or
that's the trouble.
That's the trouble.
And if people get carried away with it, it can damage the tissues. When I was in my teens, I knew a woman who always wore a veil and gloves because she had been treated with silver, and it turned her skin a horrible purple color.
Mm-hmm. Really? Well, what's the story about the real silver, that the blue bloods, and they kind of got a little blue because they had real silver? Do you think that kept them from getting something? Those silver, real silver utensils?
Sure. If you have a silver cup or silver spoon, that's the idea. It's extremely germicidal.
Ayurvedic medicine likes this idea of putting water in a real, real authentic copper cup and drinking some of that every day. Do you think that's useful or viable or reasonable?
I think it's safe.
Uh-huh. So copper is a germicidal thing?
Copper and silver are almost equal in their germ-killing ability.
That leads us to, of course, the question I really want to ask you about before we take emails, is this whole germ thing. I've sent you a video, and then I sent you... Did you get a chance to look at the text that I sent you this morning about Cowan and Kaufman and the germ thing? So what do you think about that? Do you think they're onto something?
Their purpose is absolutely right. I agree with it. But have you seen the videos of Zach Bush?
I've heard about it. I have not seen Zach's videos. And what's his argument, Dr. Pete?
His argument is exactly the opposite, but his purpose is just as good. All of them are arguing that there's nothing to panic about.
Right.
And that's my position, that there has been nothing unusual happening this last year. It's all made up fear.
Yes.
Lawyers are suing the government, asking them, where is the evidence for all of this fear? And so far, the courts haven't forced them to give up the evidence of why it's so dangerous. So I don't believe there really is any unique thing in history. It's just the annual fluctuations of influenza and colds.
Yeah, but what about the deeper idea that Cowan, a lot of people are putting out there more and more? I saw a video with about 15 different doctors on the whole germ theory, and they're saying that these things have never, ever been isolated, from HIV to polio to never been isolated properly. And that thing I sent you, they make that case. Do you ever seen a pure, real isolation done, Dr. Pete?
When a person takes a chemistry lab in school, you learn to identify chemicals with great precision. That's the purpose of the techniques. But you don't have to purify things to identify them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the crux of their argument. It's based on the mistaken idea that you have to have absolute purity to know something exists. But when they talk about pure chemical reagents, even those are every smallest bit that you analyze, it's going to have some atoms and molecules of other substances.
Right.
You don't have to purify chemicals to identify them with certainty.
Well, their argument is, Doc, that because you're getting dead particles and dead molecules and pieces of, you know, the monkey kidneys where they've been in the dish and everything, that you've never really isolated a virus and it really doesn't exist as advertised. That's their argument.
But you don't have to isolate a chemical to be confident that it exists.
A chemical. So a virus is a chemical?
Because it's not a living substance. You should categorize it as a biological chemical. Like insulin is a chemical.
Mm-hmm.
bits of short pieces of RNA, just 5 or 10 base units, that they work like chemicals. They can be catalytic and so on. So if it isn't self-sustaining, like a protozoan or a bacteria has all of the features of life, if it isn't self-sustaining, you have to describe it as a non-living chemical substance, even though complex. But I think the problem comes in not looking at the actual nature of what is a virus. How did that complex chemical come into existence if it can only be multiplied in an organism like the bacteriophage or the plant viruses? They're easy to get in a fairly pure form, not absolutely pure, but enough that everyone can even a beginner can make electron micrographs showing these things. Where with the small viruses, the electron microscope pictures are always muddy and a matter of judgment. If you see a majority of particles that are all approximately the same size and shape, then you suspect that it's something. But the evidence for even these small viruses is much better than things like the Loch Ness monster and Bigfoot and so on. There are pictures of them, but not everyone is convinced that there is.
They exist.
But so, with viruses, the evidence is about 1,000 times better than those other things. That it's good to be skeptical because it isn't as absolute clean knowledge as a lot of chemical tests can achieve.
So let me see if I can understand you, Dr. A.P. What you're saying is, so are you saying that the Pasteur whole germ theory thing is correct and viruses do go around and we can share them with each other?
I'm a critic of the so-called germ theory that gives causality to the germ, because healthy people are not subject to getting sick from germs. So the great weakness of the germ theory is that you need a particular receptive host for the germ. And if you just eat well, are relatively sanitary, and get your vitamin D and sunlight and so on, then you don't worry about these viral or bacterial or fungal diseases.
But you say they're out there circulating.
Zach Bush, I think, is right that you can find viruses on Antarctic ice and snow. They're blowing everywhere. But I think their actual nature, many biologists just don't like to touch the question, because how do you get this complex bit of DNA or RNA floating around capable of being adopted and causing participating in an infection? I think there's enough evidence now going back more than 50 years that there is horizontal transmission of nucleic acids going on constantly, even before DNA was identified as the basic genetic material. People were seeing evidence of transmission of genetic information across of extremely different biological types from plants to animals, algae to protozoa to humans and so on. And genetic engineering, I mentioned that as a control, some experimenters injected absolutely simple DNA strands and cells without treatment. Cells simply took up that massive molecule right through their so-called membrane and integrated it into their own genes. And a group at Harvard and MIT recently demonstrated that the mRNA virus strip that's used in the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, that that virus added to a human tissue, human cell culture, can be replicated by the cells as the virus people intend, but it can also be copied into DNA and integrated into the cell's genome, which is specifically what Fauci says can't happen because he studied genetics to the extent that he did in the 1960s before retroviruses were conceived as a possibility. So he says, no, it can't happen. Foreign DNA can't be integrated into our genome. But it turns out that a huge part of our genetic material comes from outside material, including virus-like particles. But when you look at the horizontal transmission of genetic information, you can see that people who have drunk water contaminated with an algae, the algae DNA has been found inside their brain cells and other body cells. Experimenters with food find that a certain amount of the DNA in food finds its way into our cells. When you wonder how it is that this DNA is wandering around from the species to species, bacteria have specifically engineered a way so that they can, if they are starving for a certain nutrient, they can mutate their genes over a period of a couple of days so that they can digest and assimilate a different nutrient. They can adapt and create new genes. And if they're exposed to a poison like an antibiotic, they can mutate and become resistant to that. And they can pack that information that's useful to them into a packet and transmit it to other bacteria of their own species or even of different species. That has been studied so well in bacteria, it's only starting to be studied. It actually began in the 1960s, but there are people who continue to study the transmission from one part of our body to another, the nucleic acids, but also from one organism to another. Apparently, as the bacteria naturally do that as part of their living properties, probably every organism has that ability to share genetic information. And just for our internal repair and maintenance system, in the last 15 or 20 years, people are accepting that the exosomes, particles just about the size of viruses,
yes,
are circulating in all of our body fluids, carrying information. Even a cancer cell can put out exosomes that induce cancer in other parts of the body. So it's not always just a repair process, but can be a disease-spreading process within the body. And so if if those things are constantly being put into our human milk and urine, for example, bacteria are being exposed to these exosomes, and bacteria can assimilate human DNA. And the same way humans can assimilate bacterial DNA, human DNA can get into the bacteria and yeast. And so just through the urine, for example, we're putting our DNA constantly into the environment where bacteria and fungus and other organisms can pick it up. And then when those organisms, bacteria especially, are picked up and carried around by other organisms, then that human fragment of DNA that we emitted is then available to the new recipient via the fungus or bacteria. So the all of the means of transmission of exosomes are known. And so exactly the point that Cowan and Kaufman are making is that degenerated cells transmit sickness, among other things, new abilities, but also new sicknesses if the transmitter was sick. So what they're saying is right, that they are probably derived from other animals and sick people, but still it's not a crime to call them viruses, because they can be transported around by bacteria and fungus and whatever.
Mm-hmm. So before we get take some emails, then Dr. Ray Pete, on this March 2nd day, where do you then separate yourself from the research and the theories on Kaufman and Cowan? We'll just use those two. There's a lot more. Where do you separate there, saying that they're missing something, or are they not? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Just that their point of their series of arguments for why it doesn't exist, it's all an exaggerated sense of purity, purification, and isolation. To identify something, it doesn't have to be pure and isolated. The other point is that the word virus shouldn't be such a magical thing. It's just a temporary potential cause of disease, which could be exudations from a sick person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but their argument, that the idea that if you don't truly isolate it, truly isolate it, which they argue have never been done, then you don't really know what you're dealing with, right? Isn't that what they're arguing?
No. The same with chemicals. We're confident that we know how a chemical reacts, and even what shape it has and weight and so on, without isolating it, just by identifying how it behaves and reacts. And the same with everything in the world. You don't have to, you know, many things exist with great confidence, but you not necessarily have to have seen it in isolation.
But if there are other little tangents to something, like, I don't know, antibiotics or monkey kidneys or whatever they do in the petri dishes, then are you still then a gray area proving that this caused that?
It's the same with causation. It's a matter of judgment and mm-hmm. probability. Causality, you always need a relatively susceptible and sick person,
yes,
to cause sickness in them. A very tough, healthy person can undergo tremendous threats, eating dirt and bathing in filth and still they're sure. absolutely healthy. Yeah.
I think one of their, what I understand, and I may be wrong, but one of their big arguments, all of these people, including, you probably heard of Dr. Lanka in Europe, Stefan Lanka, viruses do not cause disease, is that if we really look and get to the point where we don't believe that this whole virus thing, you know, is something to worry about, either flu virus, cold virus, or alleged COVID, then we can begin to look at what's really causing that, the diseases, which could be toxins and chemicals and all kinds of things, right? And bad thoughts and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that overall purpose, that don't make a virus a magical thing, because then crooks in the government, ignorant people like Fauci, will, with knowledge that wasn't good 60 years ago, will make proclamations about what the virus is going to do. It's all fantasy, nonsense, and yes, lies.
And isn't that theory, that same thought, the whole background for vaccines in general, right?
Right. The smallpox vaccine actually worked, but it was done in a traditional way, scratching the skin with the bad stuff, whatever it was, would induce a sore and usually lifelong immunity to smallpox. And that scratching the skin or irritating the intestine, that activates, in a healthy person, that activates a resistance rather than a sickness. And that vaccine was used intelligently to encircle the isolated areas where smallpox broke out. They would encircle the area with vaccination, and over a very short time were able to eliminate the disease entirely. But that was not at all good business for the vaccine industry to eliminate a disease from the world. Even though they knew how to use a vaccine intelligently, activating the skin, not injecting it deep into the muscle where it gets into the brain, but activating the proper immune system and then using it to stop in a focused, organized way to encircle and eliminate the infections. That's how a vaccine should be used, but because of the profitability, they're going crazy inoculating areas that haven't suffered noticeably from the sickness. They get half a dozen measles cases, and they want to vaccinate millions of people instead of encircling and eliminating the disease forever from the world. Disorganization is a ploy to keep selling more and more vaccines to more and more people.
You think it's possible measles and mumps are just a natural detoxification process?
No. Think there.
You think there's something there?
Like a cold or herpes, a person who is out of a proper environment, like you go indoors and keep the air warm and dry, your mucous membranes get dried out and inflamed, and just any harmful agent, exosomes, junk emitted by people in the house or that you contact, whatever it is, the irritant or toxin or germ emitted by these people, will catch in a damaged mucous membrane, and then you suffer the same process.
Hmm. Dr. Ray Peet is here. Would you be okay with me sending this audio to Dr. Cowan and Dr. Kaufman, and just to, if I know them, they'll probably do a whole video on this, and maybe we can have a little discussion.
Okay.
Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Cool. Okay, stay right there. We're going to go to some emails. Dr. Ray Peet. It is drraypeet.com or raypeet.com. Let me see if I got the right one. And he's got a newsletter that you can check out. And please do if you feel so moved. It is raypeat.com. It comes out every couple of months, and you just do raypeatnewsletters@gmail.com. Very inexpensive, and you'll see all kinds of really fun articles. He's been around this around the bend here for a long time, looking into these things, going back to, well, PhD in biology a long time ago, I guess back in about, he did his work on hormones in 1968. So we're going to do a quick little break here, and then we're going to take your emails, and it'll be good that if Dr. Pete agrees, we can come back in a couple of weeks on our regular third Monday, because we have so many emails, and we spent so much time on the whole virus thing, we're not going to be able to get to them all, and even half of them. But the colostrum sale is still going on. Excuse me. I need a little water. Colostrum thing. Hold on. Daniel Vitalis, this idea of colostrum being really good for the immune system, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the thing about colostrum is that it is developed in the blood of the cow right before it calves, and it's developed so that it can format the immune system of its calf. It's pretty important to understand that a calf would have no immune system if it got no colostrum. So it's pretty well understood that if you deprive a calf of colostrum, it's going to have a failure to thrive. It might even die. Now, human beings are a little bit different. We can survive without our mother's colostrum, but we never are going to have a fully intact immune system. But the important thing to remember is that we're living in an era where there's more people alive today with dysfunctional immune systems than ever before. And colostrum gives us the ability to actually restructure, rebuild, and reformat our immune systems so we can really thrive in our modern world today.
Explore, research, and order all of Daniel Vitalis' products clicking on the Survival links on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Yeah, and they extended the colostrum thing for a few more days through Thursday. Say 20% on all colostrum products through Thursday using promo code. I'm drinking a smoothie here, and it's kind of making me not be able to talk well. 2021, healthy 2021. You can save up to $60 on some of the colostrum products on any Survival link on the colostrum. Would you like to get a little aqua cure machine? Hydrogen is a pretty fascinating technology. Molecular hydrogen is actually a medical term and device used in China, or in Japan rather. It is called Xinnu Solution Molecular Hydrogen, a medical device in Japan for many years, and it's been being used for folks to help rebuild after a stroke and things like that. Here's George on the possibility of using it as a nice investment. There's a lifetime warranty and a one-year money-back guarantee. This is Brown's Gas Hydrogen. Many people have said, and we concur, that the number one investment we should make is in our health. Here's George Wiseman.
Last caller, I'm sorry, I didn't remember his name, said an investment. And this is really the investment kind of thing that you need to do. Not my machine specifically. I think I sell the world's best machine, and I do my best to maintain it and support the customers and everything. But regardless of who you get it from, you really should invest in your health. How are you going to enjoy life if you haven't got health? How are you going to fulfill that bucket list? So number one on the bucket list should be your health, and then you get some extra years. I say this thing not only adds years to your life, because the science is showing a 30 to 50% life extension. So I'm expecting to go to the 120, 150 years old, and I'd help a lot of people between now and then. But it also adds life to your years. There's no sense living in your last decade of life if you're in a hospital bed attached to machines, you know what I mean? Throwing a frisbee and having fun.
It's so true, isn't it? Boy, if we don't feel good and have the energy to do what we need to do, I mean, what's the point? And here's an investment with a lifetime warranty and also a one-year, no-questions-asked money-back guarantee if you don't want it. Check out this AquaCure machine, bubbling hydrogen gas, drinking it, breathing it. This is real cutting-edge technology. Check it out in our store. Use promo code ONERADIO for a 10% discount. The AquaCure Brown's Gas Machine, OneRadioNetwork.com.
We have one of the all-time best, I think, cereal. I'm cereal. I've used this sauna for, I guess, over 10 years now.
for the money and the way it works, the efficiency, the effectiveness. I think I've never seen anything to compare with the price and the effectiveness of this Relax Far Infrared Sauna. If you'd like to learn more about it, go on OneRadioNetwork.com, click on the sauna ad, and look at all the good things there. And I think you'll find that it's really something that's very powerful. If you'd like to get yourself one, just email me for the best price, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Just shoot me an email.
We are listener supported, One Radio Network.
We're talking with Dr. Ray Peet. Always fun to talk to you, sir. How do you spend most of your day? Are you still do lots and lots of research? Or I know you paint too.
A little painting, but lots of reading.
Yeah. What have you been reading a lot, mostly on these days?
What was that?
What do you read mostly on these days?
It changes. Like, I'm currently working on a newsletter related to inflammation, but the holistic aspect of the organism has almost always been neglected as a component of inflammation, and why healthy people can avoid getting inflammatory conditions. A lot of it is simply a matter of their attention, how their brain is organized in daily work. If you're scattered and distracted constantly by meaningless tasks, I think that seriously affects your inflammation processes and your immunity.
Yeah. It makes sense, though, doesn't it? If we're scattered around or not focused on breathing and who we are and as spiritual beings and our strength, then it would make sense that it would weaken us.
I'm finding things in the history of psychology and biology that support that in a very simple way.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's more simple than we even imagine, Dr. Peet. I really do. That if we're worried or in fear, I my experience is that it's in the body at that moment. It's right in there, right in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wow. Here's Linda. She says, great show, Patrick. I am a newly diagnosed type 2 diabetic. If you were consulting with me, what would you recommend to totally reverse these high blood sugar things?
First, I would identify the cause of the high blood sugar. I think the type 2 and proposed other kinds of so-called diabetes, like the pregnancy diabetes. I think these are just medical inventions to sell products and services. And it's based way back in the 1940s, research on the pituitary, pancreas, thyroid, adrenal interactions showed that the insulin was only a very tiny part of the blood sugar regulatory system, and yet doctors almost always fail to check what's going on with your endocrine system, known to regulate blood sugar. They just call it diabetes and leave it at that. Give you something that directly lowers the blood sugar, even though it's achieved at the cost of damaging your mitochondrial respiratory system, so that you go into an inefficient glucose wasting condition. And a traditional side effect problem of this treatment of diabetes has been increased lactic acid production, with serious, even deadly lactic acidosis being a result. But the principle has continued to be damage the respiratory use of glucose, so that you waste glucose and lower the blood sugar. I think the problem should be approached by looking first for what is causing the high blood sugar. And often it's just a chronically high level of cortisol production or of another hormone. And if you find out why your cortisol is high, often that's a reaction simply to hypothyroidism. Lack of thyroid hormone makes you unable to oxidize glucose, and that puts you in a stress state. The stress state amplifies to raise the blood sugar. It keeps the cells from using it and shifts you over, forcing you to run on fats. And putting fats into your bloodstream, free fatty acids are the other essential blood test for anyone diagnosed with so-called type 2 diabetes. Cortisol and free fatty acids, and if possible, checking on your lactic acid level. Your lactic acid should be at the very bottom of the so-called acceptable normal range.
And is it true that simple angst or worry or fear can raise cortisol levels?
Right, right. As well as lowering thyroid.
Wow.
Just a very sudden onset of worry, anxiety, or fear can give you a surge of free fatty acids, which will block your ability to use glucose. There's a direct antagonism. When your blood fats rise in the free fatty acid form, that blocks use of glucose, and so you can instantly create the appearance of type 2 diabetes. In other words, just high blood sugar is all they diagnose it on.
Hi, Dr. Ray Pete is with us. We are live here this morning, March 2nd. Here's one for you. Clint Pattison says he cured a rheumatoid arthritis not to consume vegetable oils as they cause leaky gut. Does Dr. Pete agree I use olive oil? Let's see, rheumatoid arthritis and vegetable oils, do they cause leaky gut and could be RA causing?
Inflammatory prostaglandins wouldn't be made except that we eat either arachidonic acid or linoleic acid or linolenic acid. Linoleic and arachidonic acids are, they call them essential fatty acids, but when animals are, or people are put on a diet that makes them absolutely deficient in the so-called essential fatty acids, their immunity and all types of resistance to infection, poisoning, trauma, fatigue, hypoxia, all kinds of stress resistance tremendously improves when you're free of the inflammatory prostaglandins made from the essential so-called fatty acids. When you eat the high PUFA vegetable oils, canola, soy, all of the popular cooking oils, you're getting a very high background content of the material from which prostaglandins will create inflammation at the slightest provocation. And it happens that olive oil contains maybe 8 to 10% of these potentially toxic polyunsaturated fats. The rest of it is safe monounsaturated, mostly. Those don't contribute to the formation of the toxic prostaglandins.
So regular use of olive oil is, in your opinion, fine?
Butter is better because it's only about 3% of the bad stuff. But if you hold your olive oil down to flavoring, maybe a teaspoonful or so, It gives good flavor if it's good olive oil, without much danger. But butter is like three times as safe.
Butter is the safest. Isn't that interesting? Wow. Here's an email. I've been fast developing cataract on my right eye, and I'm reluctant to have the operation due to sojourns. Any natural remedies for therapies for this?
People, my brother, for example, had a cataract diagnosed when he was about 70, and in his late 70s, he went back, and the oculist said he could see where there had been one, but there was no trace of a functioning cataract left. So people do recover from them when their physiology changes. The loss of energy to those cells that become opaque leads to them swelling, just like any de-energized tissue swells, takes up water, and the water, the effect is like cooking egg white. The change of the water from an organized, transparent state, it becomes an opaque, like a cooked egg white. In the cornea of the eye, that can happen to a woman with, for some reason, extreme water retention. I knew someone who suddenly, in a period of just a few hours, went blind in both eyes because the corneas became white and opaque. And just by bathing her eyes in a slightly hypertonic salt solution, the salt hypertonic salt solution removed some of the excess water, and immediately her corneas were clear again.
Interesting.
And anything that can shift your balance away from that water disorganization and retention effect can let the cataract clear up.
And that solution, any thoughts on how you would make that solution properly?
A saline comes into contact with the cornea directly, so it acts immediately, but it can't reach the lens, so it isn't going to work it might have an effect over a period of a long time, but the problem is to get your whole body shifted so that your body fluids themselves, the blood and the fluids in the eye, are bathing the eye with more water restraining effect, possibly more protein and sodium in the water of your bloodstream and all body fluids, but probably other things involved, like keeping the external degree of oxidation in your blood and fluids, keeping that higher so that you don't push things towards inflammation and water retention.
And if you were going to mix a little salt with water on the outside of the eye, what would be the proportions you would use?
For the clearing up the cornea, I think she used in a quart of water, I think she used either 2 rounded teaspoons or maybe 3 rounded teaspoons.
In a quart. And speaking of salt, this is a great lead into this question. Would you please ask Dr. Pete, writes Amy, about information on Morton's pickling and canning salt that Dr. Hal Huggins used to recommend versus, say, a Redmond salt or a Himalayan salt? Does he have any theories on this or research to show which would be the best choice?
The canning and pickling sauce, its feature is that they don't add iron and other materials for free flowing. It's just the sodium chloride in very pure form. For example, someone I knew worked in a blood chemistry lab, and they would buy most of their chemicals from a company like Sigma or Spectrum and pay astronomical prices. But when they wanted chemically pure sodium chloride, they would just go to the store.
Get pickling salt.
Yeah.
So you think it's a pretty good choice every day, pickling salt?
Yeah, because the coloring material, if it's gray or pink or whatever, the pink is usually iron oxide or iron other chemicals.
In the sea salts. Well, of course, the sea salt people make this argument that we need all of these different minerals, but you're not, you don't resonate with that.
No, some places identify 90 or 92 different minerals,
but yeah.
Most of those are toxic minerals. Yeah.
You remember Dr. Hal Huggins, Dr. Pete, right? The mercury guy?
Oh, yeah.
We used to have him on the show before he left us, and he would almost every show, he would say, I look at these blood chemistries, Patrick, every day, and he does a lot of them. You know, he would take, and he said that the people on Morton's pickling and canning salt had better balances of the everything in their blood than the people on sea salt. He said that a lot.
So. Oh, yeah, it's very clean stuff.
Clean stuff. Huh. And it's very inexpensive. I mean, you can get a whole box of it for what, a buck or something?
I think it's 4 pounds in a box for a couple dollars.
Here's one for you from Carol. I'm a woman, 77 years old, and lately I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and my whole body is internally vibrating. What could be causing this? Any way to remedy it? Wow.
The blood sugar normally falls at night as the metabolism slows down. And just the very low blood sugar can give you surges of adrenaline that create symptoms like that vibration. Mm-hmm. Sometimes with changes in many brain chemicals in reaction to the hypoglycemia, you might wake up with extreme clarity of thought or extreme panic and fear. But it's derived from the fact that the liver and muscles should be well supplied with stored glucose as glycogen. And then during the night, as we stop eating, the blood sugar falls, and liver glycogen should be released into the blood so that we don't have surges of free fatty acids. But about halfway through the night, most people do have a failure of the liver stored glycogen, and they start putting out large amounts of free fatty acids, and those fatty acids block our ability to use glucose and creates really a brain toxic situation.
Wow.
And so waking up and having a snack, a glass of orange juice or milk, for example, gives our brain some glucose and helps lower the free fatty acids in the blood.
Anything that you found over the years to do before bed to help this whole situation so you don't wake up?
Orange juice, Jell-O, marshmallows, ice cream, milkshake, emphasizing carbohydrate experiments to stop nocturnal hot flashes and night sweats. They would give them a huge amount of cornstarch, for example. Any carbohydrate will do, but it should be along with nutrients.
Oh, what's the difference between the carbohydrate there, Doc, with, or maybe, say, an organic sprouted bread or cracker or something like that?
Those
similar?
When you're under stress, any carbohydrate is better than the stress, which poisons you with the usually polyunsaturated fats that get into your brain. The brain is renewing itself during the night, so there's a huge turnover of brain substance. And if stress is putting free fatty acids that you've eaten into your bloodstream, they get incorporated very quickly as they pass through the brain. And so your brain substance is changing very quickly over a period of just a few weeks. The brain will change its substance according to what you ate.
So could this be where the whole idea of comfort food comes in, where you have something really a good carb, like a potatoes or organic pasta or something, and you just feel better if you're freaked out about something?
Yeah. It can be potatoes or pasta or a milkshake. Sugar getting your blood sugar up and your free fatty acids down. It creates a sense of peace and well-being and lowers inflammation.
Wow.
Yeah. Hypoglycemia is diabetics suffer from that when they because they aren't using their glucose. They're suffering a deficiency of glucose even when they have high blood glucose, because it isn't getting into the cells to be used. And hypoglycemia is a powerful cause of inflammation, just like hypoxia. It's basically suffocating on the energy level.
Well, Dr. Pete, you're the most fun nutritionist we know, you know, recommending milkshakes and ice cream before bed. I mean, that's great. Cool. Orange juice, I mean, doesn't get much better than that, does it?
If a person shouldn't specialize in those if they have a weight problem.
Sure.
But milk, it happens that the high calcium to phosphate ratio of milk activates the metabolism so that it burns energy at a much higher rate. Animal studies as well as human studies show that the mostly the calcium, but other things in a high milk diet are great for weight loss, a very great increase in the metabolic rate and ability to burn calories.
Interesting. Dr. Ray Pete is with us. We are live here March 2nd, 2021. We're going to talk to Fred Jaszewski and also Matthew Arrett tomorrow, Wednesday. We begin at 10 o'clock or so. Here's one for you from Alistair. Dr. Pete, how harmful is MSG? Should it be avoided completely, or are small amounts okay?
I think a small amount is okay, but it is glutamic acid is a brain excitant, and especially if you don't have a protein to balance it, there is glutamic acid at a fairly high concentration in gelatin, for example, but the other amino acids keep the glutamic acid from getting into your brain at a high level, where it could cause excitotoxic damage. So if you're just having pasta, for example, even a fairly small amount of MSG could potentially be a toxic.
What do you think about the cold? I noticed that during this, when I had no electricity, no heat, and we were out gathering wood and all that, I actually felt stronger being out there. Do you think it's could actually be healthier to live in a cold climate?
Only if you're regularly exposed to it, like animals that live outdoors develop a heavy coat of fur in the winter, and their thyroid adjusts up like four times as active during the winter.
Interesting.
But that's because of the stimulation of the skin. And so if you're well-fed and spend your days doing some activity outdoors where you're constantly exposed to the cold, that should, like in any animal, it should increase your thyroid function.
If you did cold water on your face and neck, say in the morning, really ice-cold water, how does that affect the parasympathetic or the sympathetic nervous system?
It gives you a surge of sympathetic activity.
Sympathetic activity.
They think it activates a diving reflex. Huh. In babies, you can see a shift of the blood flow, like in a seal. They drastically shift the nervous system, the sense that their face is underwater, redirects the blood circulation. So it's mostly oxygenating, the remaining oxygen goes to their brain and lungs and lets the muscles live on glycolysis. And the cold water on your face, if especially if you've been overheated, can cause that shift of the nervous system. When I worked in the woods and would be very thirsty and overheated, I would come to a stream and lie down and put my face in the cold water to drink, and I would feel what was probably a dangerous surge of nervous activity that was, I think, redirecting my blood flow to my lungs and brains, but tilted that way with my head down. It usually felt like I was in danger of having a stroke or something, a very congested feeling in my head.
Years ago, I read where they would take these Tour de France cyclists, you know, who were cycling back all day long, and they get really hot, and they'd actually have to pack their necks in ice so they could sleep. But that's almost contrary to what you've just said about sympathetic and parasympathetic, so I'm a bit confused. Maybe that article was incorrect?
What was the...
In other words, these bicyclers, you know, they would cycle all day long in the Tour de France during the summer, and they would be so heated up, they'd actually have to put these ice packs on their neck sleep, to be able to sleep.
That's just because overheating is dangerous.
I see.
If you get your temperature under control, then your body can adjust to go to sleep. But the overheating turns on what my last newsletter was talking about, the heat shock proteins, which defend against the heat, but they do that at the expense of energy production in the efficient oxidizing way. So they lower all of your healthy adaptive functions as an emergency measure against the heat. So after overheating seriously, like an athlete might, then you have to do something to try to reverse that heat shock protein suppression of your proper metabolism.
Interesting. So that's maybe why I sleep better and feel better when if I get out of the sauna and do an ice cold shower right out of there and stay under that ice cold shower for 5 minutes.
You don't want to overheat. As long as you don't have a bad reaction like fatigue, cold water, if it's too cold, it can drain your energy. The amount of energy that we actually use for functioning is a fairly small fraction of what we emit by conduction and radiation. We radiate about 3/4 of our food energy out as infrared and microwaves. And so if we're in a very too cold relative to our ability to burn calories, then our body temperature falls and we're seriously sick.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's ways that we can systematically and cleverly learn how to survive and thrive on less physical food using more of the God force?
You can survive. When I worked in the woods, I knew a guy who only took one quart of water and sipped it occasionally, and only mm-hmm. one little sandwich, and he was very apparently comfortable. When you look at the outcome over a lifetime, the higher your metabolic rate, the longer you live, and the fewer sicknesses. So wasteful heat production, uncoupling your heat production from the production of usable ATP, it has lots of beneficial effects. It reduces inflammation.
So how do we raise our metabolic rate?
Avoiding PUFA.
PUFAs?
Is the most important basic thing for most people.
And what does eating in general do to the metabolic rate? If one is survives on less food, does that lower or raise the metabolic rate?
If you're avoiding like a calorie restricted diet,
mm-hmm.
The benefit of it is that people eat almost none of the toxic polyunsaturated fats,
okay.
and they get lower intake of heavy metals and iron,
mm-hmm.
And so they're drastically reducing the poisoning. The amino acids tryptophan, methionine, and cysteine, people are almost always overeating on those amino acids in the proteins that they get. And Broda Barnes found with his experiments on himself that when he ate a high protein, almost pure protein diet, he needed at least twice as much a thyroid supplement to keep going.
Really?
Because of those particular amino acids being thyroid suppressive, anti-metabolic. And so a low protein diet, as long as you get just what you need, and gelatin is very helpful for that because it doesn't have the suppressive amino acids.
So I see. So the supplemental gelatin, like Great Lake gelatin or gelatin from bone broth and things like that?
Gelatin and carbohydrate.
Carbohydrates.
Will support your high metabolic rate at a much lower calorie intake if you avoid the toxic calories.
Here's an interesting question. Is Dr. P talking about the Schumann resonance affecting the magnetic frequencies of the Earth? Doesn't it also determine lightning strikes and disprove global warming as it's being sold?
I've only been concerned with its effects on the organisms.
Mm-hmm.
The whole electrical function of the Earth interaction with the solar wind streaming past the Earth. It's like wind chimes sort of effect. It's activated by the streaming solar wind, and the Earth resonates to that. And in the process, you get big shifts of electricity that undoubtedly contribute to why there are more thunderstorms in some seasons and how those interact with the solar cycles.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email. Go ahead.
Solar cycles are probably a better explanation for the data that they see and refer to as anthropogenic planetary warming.
Yeah, there's more information. We like a website called Suspicious Observers with Ben Davidson, and he puts out these videos, Doc, every day about the whole sun and the sunspots and everything going on, and he's been very accurate with predicting everything from earthquakes to floods to all kinds of stuff.
I think it's partly kind of a superstition, mm-hmm. Among scientists. They don't want to recognize how powerful the sun's influence is. And even the interactions of the heavy planets with the sun and
yes.
the Earth, those have influences. The traditional science people are made nervous by it's too complicated, and they call it superstition.
Yeah, a lot of the sunspot people, Dr. Pete, suggests that we could be going into a much more of a cooling rather than a warming in the next.
Until Three Mile Island happened, all of the experts were predicting for decades. They've been predicting a new coming ice age, but the Pentagon put out some publications following the Three Mile Island scare, where people turned against nuclear power because they saw the dangers.
Uh-huh.
And the Pentagon needed their nuclear power as a source of material for atomic bombs, and they didn't want people to turn against nuclear power, which they needed an excuse for why we should give up petroleum and coal and shift to nuclear power. They invented the planetary warming thing, and suddenly in just a period of a few months, the public media shifted from coming ice age to a coming heat catastrophe.
Interesting. And when was Three Mile Island? That was that in the 70s or 60s? Or,
do you remember? I forgot the exact year, 76 or 78, somewhere around.
So your research shows that that was the whole beginning of this man-made global warming thing?
Yeah. There's, I think it's called Aletha News, has a good article on the Pentagon's invention of global warming.
That's great. A couple more, then we'll let you go. Let's see here. Okay, this is Slavovsky. He says, I've been following your dietary guidelines for about 3 years, and I've seen huge improvements to my health. Thank you very much. One thing I'd like to improve more is my high blood pressure. That's around 180 to 110 on an average day. Somehow I think it's related to snoring and sleep apnea. My kids tell me I snore like a monster. Can you suggest any the way to tackle the challenge in general, what's causing the sleep apnea?
Oh yeah, usually it's hypothyroidism. And if you look at the people who have had hypothyroidism and high blood pressure, when they correct the hypothyroidism, it's the rule that they have corrected their high blood pressure too. And hyperthyroidism tends to lower the blood pressure. Hypothyroidism compensates with high adrenaline and high inflammatory processes. So hypothyroidism is a very important cause of high blood pressure.
Interesting.
As well as sleep apnea.
Have you seen, I know you've worked so diligently with people around the world for a lot of times on the whole low thyroid, have you seen where people can actually use a little bit of the piggy stuff and get this thyroid back working without having to take it every day?
I've seen two or three really spectacular examples of that. One woman was diagnosed as having a non-functioning, completely dead pituitary gland. And all of her adrenal and thyroid and other hormones had gone down to zero. And when she took, for just a few days, I think it was only a half a grain of a thyroid supplement, suddenly that little bit catalyzed a signal that the stress situation was over, and the stress had been knocking out her pituitary function. So just in a week, everything came back. And others, one woman who had been sick and disabled for, I guess, about 30 years, she felt better when she was taking a couple of grains of Armour thyroid, but she decided to experiment and got a doctor to increase the dose up 5 grains a day was the maximum he would prescribe.
5 grains.
And she felt so much better on that that she went across the state and got another doctor and convinced him to give her 5 grains. And she was almost back to normal after 30 years of extreme needed a walker to get around.
My goodness. Now, she didn't stay on the 5 grains a long time, I suspect.
No, but she got a third doctor for another. She took 15 grains for a couple of 3 weeks, and as she returned to normal, it took her maybe 8 or 10 weeks to cut it down, went back down to 5 grains, and was back to work. absolutely normal.
My goodness. Now, a grain is 60 milligrams, right? That's a lot, right?
Yeah. Rhoda Barnes' average patient got 2 grains, about 100.
About two.
Yeah, and that's about half of what a healthy gland produces. So even if you have no gland, you can function moderately well on 2 grains a day.
Is there any reason to believe, though, that, say, somebody's taking 2 grains and they would like, you know, they're only 40 or 50 or whatever, and they don't want to really take this thing for another 50 years, that they can help this thyroid to get happy and not take those 2 grains? Is there any reason to believe that's possible?
As soon as you can unload all of the stored polyunsaturated fats that create the inflammation and the stress that require thyroid and suppress thyroid, as soon as you can unload that fat. So a thin person, the first woman I mentioned, was very skinny, and it just took her a week to get out of the stress. The other one had hips that were almost 3 feet across, I think. Mm. And so it took her a lot of time to burn off some of that excess fat.
Mm-hmm. Here's the final one. This is kind of a fun question from an email or a listener. If splashing cold water on the face initiates the diving reflex, is it the increase of carbon dioxide that provides the oxygen to slow the breath down?
Oh,
do you understand? I don't understand the question. Do you? If splashing cold water on the face...
I think there is a lot of carbon dioxide, because the remaining oxygen is being circulated mostly to the brain and lungs, and so they do accumulate a lot of carbon dioxide. But I think there's an immediate nervous signal to stop breathing hard, but over a period of 15-20 seconds or so, the carbon dioxide starts having its effect of calming the stress nerves.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the higher carbon dioxide increases your need to breathe, I think for a diving animal it is probably having a protective stabilizing effect.
Finally, do you think it's important for us all to have our share of fruits throughout the week, other than orange juice? It's good for us in general.
If you choose from fruits that aren't starchy or irritating, some fruits can be very allergenic and hard to digest, especially in supermarkets, that they aren't properly ripened. Peaches, for example, are usually hard and indigestible.
Oh, so when you get those kind of things, you bite into them, you just know that you shouldn't be eating that. That's a lot of starch and not ripened properly. Not ripened properly. Well, Dr. Pete, can we talk you into coming back on your regular time in a few weeks?
Okay.
Do you want to do that? Great. And then we'll just dig right into the emails, because we have so many here. And if you don't mind, I will send out your little discourse on your opinion about Cowan's and Kaufman's and other people's work. I'll send it to them and we'll see what they say, and maybe we'll do something with it.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, sir. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Take care. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. We always agree to Dr. Pete to just keep him for an hour and a half. Otherwise, we can just talk to him all day. So that'll be fun. We'll see what Dr. Cowan and Dr. Kaufman and others, if they even respond, who knows. But they're good people. I think they're going to enjoy what he had to say. And I'm not familiar on the whole Zach Bush thing, so you know, I'm not sure about that. I haven't kept up with Zach Bush, but I sure do think that Cowan and well, everybody, Dr. Pete, he agreed that if we could get more clear on exactly what's going on, that we can then begin to hone in on what is causing all this stuff we call diseases, without yeah, you know, chasing a bunch of germs that, like the COVID thing that we know that it doesn't even exist. Well, it's curious, huh, kids? Okay, well, so we're going to have fun. I will see you tomorrow with Fred Jaszewski in The Real World of Money. Also, Matthew Arrett. He's going to be here, and he's going to tell you how deep state the deep goes, and why to hear some of the stuff here and where it all started. And then a really interesting fellow up in the northwest, rather, and we're going to talk to Paul, what's his name? Oh, well, his name is escaping me. But anyway, he's cool, regenerative farming, and we're going to need to be doing more of that because we saw what happened here in Texas when we had these temperatures and the food stores finally opened. You go in the store and there was no food. It was like, okay, wait a minute. There's no food here. What am I doing here? I mean, seriously, it was like that during the, I think we were about, 10, 12 days without, you know, the basic necessities of water and power and all kinds of stuff. The power was off and on. But then finally, when we wanted to get to the store and the streets got clear, and then we went to the local HEB to pick up a few things, and they didn't have anything. You know, we were finding stuff to feed Doodle because she eats a lot of chicken and grass-fed beef and organic chicken, and there was nothing there. I mean, the shelves were just like, phew. So I had that experience as well when I lived in New Orleans in the 70s, and when a hurricane was coming, and they would talk about, they would predict as hurricanes, and they were pretty, you know, hardcore in New Orleans, and you go to the store and there was nothing. So the, you know, I don't, you know, this is not fear porn stuff, but these, all the stores, I don't care where they are, they're all in just-in-time inventory these days, right? They don't have a big area where they're storing stuff. They got a few pallets of water, you'll see, a few stuff that they sell a lot of, toilet paper, but no, they don't have a lot of food. And so if the trucks ever get stopped or, you know, a highway, you know, gets an earthquake thing and main highway from, you know, whatever, 10 from California to Texas, there's not going to be any food at the store. So, I mean, we have to, you know, think more about this and prepare for just to take care of ourselves. So we're going to do more on the whole farming thing. And also, we're going to get George on real soon, George Altgeld, and talk about and get some people on to how we can do more creative farming at home with the greenhouses and stuff on the balconies if you have a you know, an apartment, stuff like that. So there's lots to do. I love you all very much. Thanks for your ongoing support. We're running all kinds of fun videos when we're not running our streaming shows from One Radio Network. So stay in tune. Come on our website, see what we have. We find all kinds of crazy things, and they're fun, and they're just more information. We're not suggesting that everything that we run and all these different shows, that we agree with them all. This just information, and take it for what it's worth. If something that's fun, well, you know, listen to it and maybe explore the people. So I love you. Thank you. And we will see you on the morrow at 10 o'clock.
Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.